Ladies and gentlemen, welcome you all to Drive2 HR, yet another week, yet another Monday, and let's kick off this show with our wonderful guest, Heather Kinsey. Hey, Heather, welcome back to Drive2 HR.
Well, thank you very much for having me again.
Heather, I remember I talked to you a year ago when the entire Drive2 HR team was at an event at in Dallas itself, I think, at Summer Brand Camp. And it's been a year right now. So what's going on in your world?
Well, Alaska is Alaska. And we're waiting for our winter to come. I understand you guys have taken it from us today.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's totally exciting conversation that is happening right now, and I can't wait to hear what's going to happen. So, Heather, at Drive2 HR, you know the drill. Let's kick off with a brief intro. So our audience, if there is anyone out there who doesn't know of you, let them know who you are and what you do.
All right. Well, my name is Heather Kinsey, and I am currently living in Anchorage, Alaska. I am a sole proprietor, human resources, and organizational development consultant. I have kind of put out my shingle about 10 years ago. I'm 20 years into my profession, believe it or not. And about 10 years ago, I hung out my shingle and have a variety of clients, both public sector and private sector, large and small business. But I also serve as the sole HR person, albeit an outsourced one, for quite a few of my smaller clients that are just too small of a business to justify a part-time or a full-time human resources person. So that's what I do, and in my spare time, I own a frozen yogurt shop because I love desserts, and I live in Alaska, and we eat a heck of a lot of frozen desserts. So.
Oh, that's great to hear. So, from an HR perspective, what's keeping you up at night these days?
Well, a variety of things, but lately, and I don't know if it's the time of year that people start thinking about money or processes, but lately quite a few of my clients and myself in my own business have been kind of losing sleep or stressing out about overall costs, the personnel costs, the lack of productivity that's occurring in our workforces, the do-overs, I call them leftovers in the work. Mm-hmm. So when something is done wrong or if something's not communicated properly, it always results in a do-over. And that costs the organization money. So about 10 years ago, I learned about Toyota Lean methodology. And, of course, we don't use the Toyota anymore now. It's just called Lean. But I started facilitating Lean events, so usually anywhere between 3 and 5 days long. But you'd take a look at a process, you'd quantify that process, break it down, and try to figure out a better way to do it, and then quantify what that might look like in the future and see if there's some cost savings to the organization or some increases to quality or productivity or value. And I really love doing that, and so I continue to do that. And probably about 3 or 4 of my clients just in the past month or two, which is why this is on my mind, have asked that I've come in and facilitate their teams through what I call Kaizen craziness and to try to figure out if there's a better way to do the work that they do.
That's a great beginning for the show. In fact, this is that time of the year, right, the end of 2014, and people are getting prepared for 2015, how to reduce the cost, and so many layoffs are happening. And while we were talking about process improvement, why do you think that organizations should consider this as an important aspect when it comes to having a continuous process improvement within their organization?
Well, I'm going to answer that from a human resources perspective. I mean, I think
Sure.
we can all agree that organizations need to quit wasting money. But from a human resources perspective, I try to tell, you know, my HR clients and the HR people that I'm mentoring that they've got to start considering how they add value to an organization. And, you know, whether it's modeling, you know, financial responsibility within their own HR team or modeling change management, because process improvement obviously comes with change, and I think the human resources professional needs to take some accountability to model good management. But I think we also have to take some pretty hefty responsibility in engaging the workforce. And in my opinion, a process improvement event, you know, whether it's a formalized facilitated event like the kind that I do, or whether it's just a think tank going on within a team. But I think that that encourages employee engagement and ownership. And the HR professional that can recognize that can kind of, I don't know, immerse themselves into the operational processes that go on in the organization and help that supervisor or that team or that manager really kind of take a look at what they do and where they could reduce some waste or reduce some turnover, some do-overs, you know, like the lack of productivity or the inefficiencies that happen, and really get the team members, the people that are doing the work, excited about doing something differently or doing something better. And so from an HR perspective, I guess it's a long answer to your question, but I think it needs to be important to us because I think that's how we show value. You know, we don't get to go out and market a new product or invent a new revenue source. What we get to do is we get to make sure that the workforce that is currently working for the organization is the best that it could be. And I think that if all HR professionals were to, you know, grab onto that bull and ride that through, I think that quite a few people would be really recognizing the value that HR professionals bring to the table.
That is so true. And when in fact you talked about, you know, lean process improvement, I really wanted to stick to that particular point before we get more into engaging the workforce. So it would be really great if you can break down what it really means when it comes to having a lean process improvement. Is it something different than the traditional way of thinking that normally the HR used to think? Or is there something called lean thinking that is happening?
Yeah, lean thinking, yeah. I'll break it down like I do to my son, actually. I did this with my son just the other day. He's 7, and he didn't know why he had to go to campfire and why I couldn't take him to the bus. So I was trying to explain to him that I needed to be at my client's office at 7:30. Anyway, I broke down lean to a 7-year-old, and so I'll kind of do it here for the radio show. So I told him about making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and this is what I tell my clients, that you take a process and you flow out a process, and it could be a data management process, you know, like, you know, an accounts payable process, finding, you know, traveling with an invoice, you know, and having and pretending you're that invoice and figuring out, you know, who needs to approve it and is it coded correctly and all that, and eventually a check goes out. But it's flowing out that process in the minutia of detail. And then what I do with my clients is I help them quantify it, because I have to assign a financial value to what that process costs. But in doing so, we have to figure out our error rates, you know, because is that accounts payable process, as an example, is that accounts payable process perfect the very first time it goes through that process? And the answer is undoubtedly no. And so we quantify the financial costs, not just the employees that are, you know, having a step in that process or working through a step in that process, how much that employee costs per minute. And, you know, if it takes 5 minutes for them to work through their process, then we have assigned personnel cost assigned to that. But then if that step of the process is generally done wrong, we have to assess a probable error rate, and we have to quantify that too. So after we flow out the process, we quantify that to figure out how much that process is costing the organization. You know, and if that process is done, you know, 523,000 times on average per year, then we times that amount by, you know, that cycle, and we figure out the total yearly cost. And then what we do is we interview staff. So I actually give a basic interviewing technique to everybody on the team that I'm working with, and they go out and they interview customers, they interview people that are maybe working in the downstream process or the upstream process, and they try to get ideas for things that could add value or add quality or decrease waste. And then we all come back to the table and we sort of think tank that, and we figure out if there's any change that could happen. you know, anything. It could be as simple as moving a printer closer to somebody that uses it a lot, or it could be that we're asking for different information, you know, on a form that's filled out five steps prior. So then we think of a future state, and it's our, you know, in a perfect world, the process would be X. And we flow that process out. And then we get the powers that be, you know, whether it's, you know, the information technology folks or the, you know, the VP of finance or whoever, we get them to take a look at our future state, you know, wish list and make sure that there's no regulatory issues that, you know, we're, you know, somehow not in compliance with, or we make sure that it's probable that this particular step could be automated or whatever. And then we quantify that so we could give the board of directors or the, you know, the C-suite an idea of the cost savings if they were to empower the team to do something differently. And that's really the last day. We present out part of what I do and part of what I think Lean celebrates is the empowerment that the team has to go and present their ideas to leadership. And hopefully, of course, it gets approved. And then they are the ones in charge of implementing the new changes and training all of their coworkers on how we're going to do it differently in the future, why we're going to do it differently in the future, and why they should be excited about it. And so I'll generally do a follow-up, you know, whether it's the next quarter or the next month, to make sure that the new process is indeed implemented and that the company is enjoying the savings. So that's Lean the way I do it in, 5 minutes.
That's interesting. That's interesting. And hearing this, I know this involves a lot of creativity and willingness to change from our own members, from our own HR practitioners, and then from our workforce as well. But basically, from the leaders, what do you expect, or how do you want to have a management system that in place that really supports a culture of process improvement?
That is such a great question, Nisha, and I'll tell you what I know what my wish list is, but let me start with what doesn't work. And I'll give you an example. I've used my client's name, but I will say it's a quasi-government client. But they wanted me to come in and do a process improvement on a financial process, so data management in the financial system. And we were talking about who might be on that team. And they were insistent on having supervisors and managers on that team, that no line staff would be on the team. And so I pushed back, as I believe a good Lean or any process improvement consultant would do, they pushed back a little bit to suggest to them that empowerment of staff and getting the right people at the table needs to happen. And they were just insistent that they were, quote-unquote, so regulated that it was imperative that only managers deal with this process improvement and this change. And I refused the work. And I know that sounds a little egotistical or narcissistic or stupid or whatever, but the fact of the matter is that can't happen. One, because the managers are so far removed from the actual work, and two, because I believe that top-down change is more inefficient than bottom-up change. And so to really answer your question more directly, I think that what management needs to do is they need to let go of the control that they find so much comfort in, and they need to model change management, and they need to model getting outside of their comfort zone and showing that risk, you know, controlled risk is okay. And that allows their staff to realize that they're heard, that they've got a voice, that their voice has credibility and intelligence associated with it, and that the employees, if there's some controlled risk that they can think outside of the box, then creativity and innovation is encouraged. And so I think what management has to do, if they truly want to embrace process improvement, if they want to embrace value-added work, if they want to embrace change and decrease of waste and increase of service, what they have to do is they have to give up control of the means and the methods of how this work is done. Because these sacred cows of we do it this way, you know, I did it this way when I was in that job 7 years ago, and don't fix what's not broken. I think that's just damaging America's workforce, and it saddens me, actually, because these bright and intelligent young or old line staff, nine times out of ten, they know better than their supervisor. And I wish that management would just listen to them from time to time.
That is really sad to hear. But when it comes to HR, after all, we are calling ourselves as change agents, right? So why can't we do this? So, Heather, this basic question comes to my mind, maybe the lack of knowledge that I have, but probably you can solve that by answering to my question. You know, when we talk about Lean or Six Sigma, normally people associate that with the manufacturing industry or manufacturing process, right? But when it comes to other industries like surveys, how do you expect, is this Lean methodology or Lean process improvement can be applicable to any other industries? What are your experiences? What have you dealt with? And please take us to that.
I think that's a good question, too. And I get a lot of that from my clients and my colleagues. And it's actually in a snarky way up here in Alaska, because Alaska has very little manufacturing going on in the state. But I just break it down simply, and I look, you know, that person straight in the eye, and I say, you know, accounts payable or procurement or, you know, a reclassification process, if I'm talking to an HR person, that is manufacturing a piece of data. You know, we're taking one thing, whether it's an invoice or a new client number or new employee data or whatever it is, and we are turning that into an employee record or eventually, you know, a check that gets paid out to the vendor. But we're manufacturing the data. And I usually will talk to a client or a colleague or someone that just can't quite understand how one is applicable to the other. I talk to them about assembly line of information. And most everybody can understand, you know, a basic, I don't know, we'll use employee data because it's an HR show, but most people can understand that when they work in an organization, their first day or their first week, they're filling out a lot of paperwork, you know, whether it's their beneficiary information or their emergency contact or, you know, address, whatever. And, you know, we don't all work for fancy schmancy organizations that our LinkedIn profile becomes our application and our application becomes our employee record. You know, and not all organizations have that, and believe it or not, they still use paper. So, but most people can understand that. Well, I tell them what happens to that data. From an HR perspective, you know, an emergency contact information gets turned into, you know, it gets put into the system, or your social security card number or your, you know, your W-4 information that eventually ends up at payroll or that type of stuff. And that is a manufacturing of data, and it becomes something else, and it's needed for something else. You know, for instance, we need your address because eventually, you know, you have to get paid and that paycheck has to have a name and an address associated to it, or we need your bank information because that direct deposit has to happen. And the inputting of that is no different than, you know, making a candle or making a car. You know, you got to start somewhere. A car starts with a bunch of metal, from what I understand, and it ends up being something you drive. And so that's that's the way I explain it, and I try to get my clients to understand that there can be errors in processes that are just as detrimental as a recall on your minivan. You know, for instance, if your employees are paid incorrectly because their information was not input correctly, or if their health insurance is somehow screwed up because the data wasn't input correctly, or if a vendor is not paid for 90 days and the company is assessed finance charges or, you know, delinquent payment charges, those errors are just as detrimental to a company's bottom line than it was when an organization had to recall every single minivan for a brake problem. So, I mean, obviously, you know, it's scalable, so, you know, we're not talking about, you know, health and safety issues, but when it comes to a company being profitable, they've mm-hmm. got to make more money than they spend, and do-overs cost money, just like a recall of a minivan costs money.
That is so true. So I'm assuming lean process improvement has something to do with big data, because we are working on that data aspect over here, right? So what are you expecting from our HR folks when it comes to learning more about how to handle data when it comes to helping you do your job better?
You know, that's an interesting question. I've often thought of my lean work going away in human resources, at least for human resources processes. Every single time I see a demo of a really, really cool human capital management program, right? Because a super cool software as a service, single platform, obviously, HCM program really helps the HR professional or the HR team eliminate waste in data. And that's because, you know, you're only entering employee data once, whereas most HR inefficiencies and waste occur with human data entry error, right? So mm-hmm. in a single platform software as a service application, you're only entering the data once. So the probability, you know, provided you're dotting your I's and crossing your T's, the probability of you making a mistake for that piece of data is fairly low. And so the other processes that are downstream from that, you know, whether it's payroll process or a performance management process or a reclassification process or whatever, they have a very high probability of being accurate because you're not re-entering that data. So I love software as a service applications, single platform applications, and I also love the ones, the organizations that truly empower their staff to do self-service data entry. Because one of the things about Lean that I love is it talks about or it highlights the vested interest that an employee has in getting their work right, you know, at the point of, at the touch point, right, at the point where they actually are doing the work. And what I love about self-service, you know, HR big data, so to speak, is mm-hmm. as an employee, I have a vested interest in making sure that my address is correct, that my Social Security card is correct, you know, my number that I entered is correct, that, you know, that my emergency contact is correct, as opposed to the human resources admin clerk that, you know, I was just one cog in many, many cogs that had to be, you know, data entered. So I said all that to say this. I think that lean and the quality that goes along with that philosophy of, you know, making sure you do it right the first time, making sure that, you know, you don't touch things twice if you don't have to, I think that goes away with the advent of the technology that is currently available to HR professionals right now, which I'm just a huge advocate for embracing it. If you're still doing multiple data entry in Microsoft Excel spreadsheets, you know, by gosh, start begging and pleading for an HCM software.
Oh, yeah. And for most of the companies who does have a good software, for example, employee self-service, employees themselves can enter their own data. What if their address is going to be different after 6 months of time of joining that organization? And as you said, it has to be a vested interest that employee has to take care from their own perspective, have to make sure that their data is correct, that they have, that HR has with them. So, Heather, this question of cost, employees or companies might have this question in their mind, can I afford to implement, you know, this lean process methodologies or lean process improvement? When it comes to the cost of implementing this process, what do you say? How much is going to be the cost, and is it affordable for small and big organizations altogether?
Right. It's a good question. It's kind of hard to answer. Of course, the snarky answer, Misha, as you know, is you can't afford not to, right? I mean, and I say that quite a bit, but that is snarky, and you know, that doesn't really make the CFO feel better about him or herself. So usually what I tell people is that if they embrace the concept of allowing the staff that do the work, if they embrace the concept of allowing them to change their work, then I can almost guarantee a 20 to 30% overall costs in operational, you know, in operational money. So in a savings in operational costs. Because I have yet, I mean, I've been doing this now for almost, gosh, 9 years, 10 years, I've been doing lean stuff. I have yet to see a future state be, you know, less than 20 to 30% savings than how they're currently getting it done. And it's not just the savings, it's the increase in engagement and in the increase in quality, the decrease in do-overs. And that's actually very hard to quantify. I know that it's possible to quantify it, but I guess I'm just not smart enough to do that. So I just look at operational costs alone, 20 to 30% savings annually. And so, you know, if you have a cost, the one I just did, it was for a utility company. They had one process that when you quantify the whole thing, costs about $168,000 per year for them to work on that process. And it happened to be one of the processes that their customers complained the most about. And so we did future state with them, and our proposed costs is $62,000 per year. So look at the savings, 168 to 62. And we're only in our third month, but there has been not one customer complaint. In 3 months of the new implementation of the process, whereas it used to be the one and almost the primary thing that their customers complained about. And so, again, I don't know how to quantify lack of customer complaints. I don't know what value to put on that, other than the snarky value of priceless, right? When you can eliminate customer complaints, is it priceless? So I would recommend that most people look at the operational costs first, and if their facilitator is doing their job correctly, and if they are truly empowering the staff to make change, I think that they can expect 20 to 30% in cost savings. And that's a huge number.
That is a huge number indeed. So, Heather, we have about 2 minutes left at this point, and I really, really want to ask this question of engaging the workforce when it comes to, yeah, we do have that process improvement in place. So how that is going to empower your employees or probably engage the workforce?
Well, I think anybody, yourself, me, anybody listening, if we were asked today from our boss, hey, do you have an idea to make this better? Every single one of us would be able to say yes. Some of us may not care, but if we were encouraged to share our ideas, we would find that the caring, or I call it the give a darn factor, would follow. And so I personally think that you just ask your staff, do you want to be a part of improvement? Do you want to be a part of doing things better? Do you want to look better to our customers and to our internal customers and to our bosses and to our staff? Do you want to be more respected? Do you want to have less do-overs? Do you want to be less frustrated? I'm sorry, but if someone says no to all of those things, then they probably need to resign, and hopefully they can find a job that they can say yes to. But most of us want to be better. We want to do the right thing. We want to be the person that feels good about the value they added to the workforce. And so I say let them do it. Get your teams together and let them embrace, you know, doing something better and give them the power to do it.
Exactly. So, Heather, thank you so much for joining with us today. And we always appreciate your presence at Drive Through HR. And where can our audience connect with you and get a hold of you?
Well, I'm on Twitter. So it's Leading Solution Twitter, Kinzie, K-I-N-Z-I-E. I'm also on LinkedIn. I have a Facebook page for my business. It's called The Leading Solution. Or you can connect with me on Facebook as a human. So.
All right. So have a wonderful rest of the day and wonderful week ahead. We will talk to you all soon. And Heather, as always, a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, Nisha, thanks for having me. And I hope you enjoy today.
All right. Thanks, Heather. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.